Hello, welcome to another episode of Everything is Canon, a Siddlings podcast, a podcast where we discuss the latest books and novels with the people who wrote them. I'm your host, Steve Dunk, and however you may have found your way here, thanks so much for tuning in. If you like that intro music, then you've got great taste. That's Sam Witwer and the Crash Tones. If you want to hear more of the Crash Tones, you can download their latest album, Revenge of the Crash Tones, on iTunes or visit samwitwer.com. Today in the show, I'm joined by C.B. Lee, author of the great new book, Minecraft the Shipwreck. This sixth book in the Minecraft novel series follows teens Jake, Emily, and Tank as they discover and unravel the mysteries of an extraordinary underwater world, which they stumble across in a seemingly abandoned Minecraft server. Not only is this book a Minecraft player's dream, but the story itself is an earnest one, full of wonderful character work and thoughtful examinations of the human condition. We talk about all sorts of things, including the Claudia Kishi Club documentary, which CB was a part of, her contribution to the just-released From a Certain Point of View, The Empire Strikes Back anthology, her first foray into the Star Wars universe, and of course, Minecraft. So warning, this is a spoiler discussion, and if you haven't read any of these books and don't wish to be spoiled, better stop listening now, but definitely double back once you've had a chance to read the books.
Hi everyone, welcome to the show. We've got a great one today. My guest and I have lots to discuss, and I'm sure we're going to run out of time, but we'll do our best. Mostly it's going to be me geeking out on her about all the cool shit she's doing. Let me introduce, C.B. Lee is a Lambda Literary Award-nominated writer of young adult science fiction and fantasy. Her works include the Sidekick Squad series, Ben 10, and All Out Now. Seven Tears at High Tide won her a 2016 Rainbow Award for Bisexual Fantasy and Romance and was also named a finalist in the Bisexual Book Awards in Young Adult and Speculative Fiction the same year. She loves to write about queer teens, magic, superheroes, and the power of friendship, which are all pretty good things, I'd say. She has two new books out. We're going to talk about both of them today. One is called Minecraft, The Shipwreck. It's pretty much exactly what it says. And also, we can officially welcome her to the Star Wars family. She has contributed a short story to the latest From a Certain Point of View, The Empire Strikes Back. Hi, CB. Welcome, welcome, welcome. I'm very stoked that you're here.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, yeah, there's cool. Like, there's a bunch of stuff I want to talk to you about. You're just... To me, everything you do is super cool, so I don't know what it is, but we're going to talk about it anyways and try and figure it out. But I got to ask, how are you dealing with this week and just the ongoing, like, just this fucking madness that's happening now? Like, how are you doing? Are you doing okay? Does this stuff roll for you, or do you?
Yeah,
I'm psychotic over it. Like, yeah,
it's been a, oh my gosh, I don't know. This whole year has been wild because it's been like, yes, the month of March, that was March, 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 and then like April, May, June, July, like the entire summer just got squished into one thing, and then October was part of that, and then November, like this week has been a decade. I don't know, I just, you know, one hour at a time, you know, it's you know, I would like to stop living in a historical event, so
it's funny because it's like it's been such a shit show over a year, you know. You're right, people are, you know, 2020 is now a marker. People are going to say, like, remember 2020, and we're going to have to be like, yeah, which part?
Like, it just doesn't seem like January, like it, every month there was something, like, yeah. It just seems like another era. Like, remember there were fires in Australia,
yep,
and then,
yep,
you know, all these huge disasters, and then, like, you know, and then like the pandemic and everything that like it exposed that has been, you know, systemically a part of our society, and, you know, all of these flaws. It just, it's not like all these problems suddenly became a problem in 2020. It was just like, you know, the pandemic laid bare all of these things that were wrong with the system to begin with.
But. Right. No, but yeah, I mean, you're being polite, but basically this stuff's been here forever, but, you know, I'm a white guy. So us stupid white people have finally woken up. Right. And we're just like, it's taken just these awful things to happen for a lot of people to finally clue in. And the sad part is I don't feel like, you know, those white folks, you know, that demographic still don't get it. I don't think they still don't care. And I don't think this week has changed anything.
We'll see. Like I said, yeah, hour by hour, I think there's a lot of specific, you know, like races that were like, I was like excited about to celebrate like new people in,
yes,
you know, the House and the Senate.
Yep.
just like propositions, like, you know, raising the minimum wage. There's good stuff happening.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. You know, I'm just such a cynical bastard. It's so, you know, like, it's like you're, and I'm same as you, where I look to the down ballot stuff, and there are some great things. We've got a lot of firsts, you know, mm-hmm. that have got elected this time around. But my stupid head dwells on the fact that, like, you know, they also nominated or elected like a QAnon person and basically like this full on Nazi supporter. And like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, I don't know. That's just me. I'm just such a down person. And so it's just hard, but it sounds like you've got a somewhat healthier approach than I do. That's for sure. So that's good. One of the things I am sort of looking forward to, and you know, as you're a creative person, I'm looking forward to see what comes from this year creatively from yourself and all the other wonderful creators and authors. And it's going to be interesting to see, you know, what is birthed from this year from a creative standpoint.
Yeah, I think that will be interesting in a few years' time to see. I don't know what... I don't know. I was writing this year, but a lot of it was really challenging on top of like everything that was happening. And I feel like it's definitely valid for like creators. I don't know. I've just been seeing a lot of people struggling creatively as well. But I feel like there's definitely going to be, it's going to impact, you know, our culture for a long time. And, you know, the effects of it in literature will be a specific effect. I don't know if we'll be able to see it soon, but it will be something to see.
Yeah, for sure. One of the bright spots from this year was the, it's on Netflix. It's called The Claudia Kishi Club. It's this amazing, but way too short documentary directed by Sue Ding. And it's exactly what the title says it's about. It's about Claudia Kishi, who was one of the members of the Babysitters Club. And so you got to be a part of that. Like I said, I love this documentary, but yeah, I wish it was longer because I loved it so much. Talk to me about your involvement in that and sort of how it came to be.
Sure. So actually, the documentary was filmed in 2018. Right. I first met Sue a while back, and we had been talking about like just how awesome Claudia and her story was. And Sue was, you know, working on this documentary, and she had this vision about, you know, just interviewing creatives, specifically Asian American creatives who were inspired by Claudia. And so, you know, at the time, I'm interested to see if she will, you know, produce a full feature length. That would be amazing, because we talked for like hours. So I had so much to say.
Right.
But yeah, it was a lot of fun. I'm so proud of her. I'm so excited for, you know, that, you know, it premiered on Netflix and, you know, it's getting the attention, and it was just nominated for a Critics' Choice Award, which is amazing. So all the congrats to Sue. And yeah, it was just an honor to be a part of it and just talk about, like, it was an interesting, very specific slice of my childhood reading the Babysitter's Club's books and what they meant to me as like an Asian American girl, and just like as kind of like an oddball, an outcast. And just, I felt like Claudia kind of speaks to, you know, a lot of us who really gravitated towards her and just, you know, the way she was written. And it's been fun just to see, like, you know, with the new Babysitter Club series on Netflix as well. I think the, like, that show has just been, it's so good. like book adaptations are so challenging to do in a, you know, when you're any adaptation, if you're doing it to film or television, but I felt like they did such an amazing job with the casting and the writing and which, you know, how to make it relevant to 2020. And it was just like a bright spot earlier this spring, like just watching the whole thing. And so the documentary kind of premiering around the same time was really timely and fun just to have that in that.
Yeah. The Netflix series is really good too. Mimona Tamada plays Claudia in that, and mm-hmm. she's great. She's fantastic. You know, I talked to Sarah Kuhn earlier this year, so I got to ask her some questions about it as well. Mm-hmm. And, but it really packs a punch emotionally, I thought. And you had some interesting things to say. You know, the part about sort of not living up to your mother's expectations, or at least what, you know, the perfect daughter image was supposed to be. And you felt maybe you didn't quite hit that mark in your mother's eyes anyways. Although I'm sure you were I'm sure she would probably maybe disagree. Maybe she thought you were, but so, you know, that part struck me as really, just really great and honest. And I got emotional watching it for sure with all the testimonials, because, you know, it's important, but it's hard to hear these things because, you know, as somebody who didn't experience stuff like that and who I consider myself empathetic, it's important that we hear these stories. And one of the things that you said that really, really sort of like struck me in a really profound way, I'm going to misquote you probably, but you say something like, you perceive the world as a world without you in it. That was really great. And I thought that was really, really, you know, sincere and a really honest thing to say on camera. I don't think a lot of people would be able to do that.
Yeah, it's like, I've always been an avid reader as a kid, and like, I was really obsessed with like science fiction and fantasy particularly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all the books that I would read that would have like any Asian characters in them, like they were very specific to like, they were either like contemporary or historical, and they were great, but they were like one specific kind of like one specific story. And I wanted more. I wanted like fiction. I wanted like the stars. I wanted epic, you know, adventures and galaxies and planets. And it was definitely a world that like, I didn't really see myself in. I didn't see myself saving the day. I didn't see myself like getting to have those kind of like those storylines, you know. It was like, okay, this is only for like, you know, I think one of my favorite things about like Star Wars is it totally captures the imagination that like, you know, Luke Skywalker is this like young farm boy on Tatooine, and he's kind of like, he captures that essence of like everyone believes there's this amazing thing out there for them. And it's part of that spirit of like in a lot of sci-fi and fantasy where you're dreaming of something greater. And as a kid, I felt like I dreamt of something great, like just like fantastic my whole life. And it's hard when you don't see yourself like reflected back at you, and you look at the world and the world is like, no, you don't exist, or you can't exist in these stories. And like, it's tough. Just really affects you because you're like, okay, if I do exist, then I can only exist as a specific like stereotype or these specific kinds of characters. So like in the late 90s, early 2000s, or like, you know, things started to like change. But a lot of like, if you saw like an Asian American character on TV, it was usually kind of like you would have like the nerdy sidekick, or like the girl with the colorful streak in her hair, that she was kind of punk-ish. Mm-hmm. And she was like rebellious against the quiet, submissive stereotype, which is a stereotype in itself, because then you're like, oh, she's a streak in her hair. And there's this whole color streak theory. I'm sure if you talk to Sarah Coote, she's a great essay on it. Yeah. And then like, it was like, okay, who could you be? You could be a Power Ranger. You could be a reporter. You could be,
You were othered a lot, right?
I mean, yeah. And so it was very like those were the kind of roles that we saw.
Yeah.
As a kid, it was like, okay, Connie Chung and Claudia Kishi, and then Trini on Power Rangers, and Michelle Kwan. And so these were kind of like big figures, and they were great and they were amazing. But like you know, when you think about like the kinds of role models that kids have, that like you can be anything, and you know, I want people to be able to see themselves as like not just one particular kind of success. And like, you know, parents, and like I think something that is relatable to many people is we all struggle with like the expectations that others put upon us, whether it's like from society at large or like our parents, or whether it's like no expectations. It's how the world perceives you that is in turn like reflected from like, you know, all of, it's just one big feedback loop. So
yeah,
there's definitely a lot to like be explored here and a lot of conversation to have. And I think things are like the landscape of like representation and you know, roles, and you know what's exciting about like particularly that documentary was, you know, all the other creators, and also just like watching it for the first time was great because I got to see what everyone else was saying too, and Sue's amazing editing skills,
right?
Just putting together which like how the stories were interweaving. But like all these creators who as children felt a particular kind of way and then grew up and were like, okay, now I want to create a story that I can see myself in, and I want to create something that will inspire other people.
Right. And, you know, it's just when you're sort of naming your representation out in the world, like, you shouldn't be able to name them all, right? Like, you know, there should be an endless amount of, you know, Chinese, Vietnamese, you know, American representation, whether it's in books, on screens, on TVs, whatever. Like, you shouldn't be able to name them all. The fact that there was a time when you could name them all is, I think, to your point, not ideal, right?
Yeah, and it was, like I said, like as a kid, I could name them all. And now it's amazing.
You shouldn't be able to. You shouldn't have been able to. And And I mean,
now you can't even name them all in like one particular medium, which is amazing. Like,
that's what I'm saying, right? Like, it was shitty. There was a time when you could name them all, and now you shouldn't have been able to. And now we're finally starting to really make good progress there, where, like you said, you can't now. And there's been some great, especially with, I think, for the Asian community lately too, right? On screens, I'm talking on screens specifically, it's leaps and bounds the last few years. And it seems like they finally realized that, like, you know, studios can cast Asian actors, and it's profitable, and because people want to see them, and they're great. So, you know, hopefully we're there, or we're getting a lot better anyways. You really did a great segue there for me a second ago. You started talking about Star Wars. So thank you for that. So welcome to the Star Wars publishing family. I'm not in it, but you are now. So you have a short story in next week's, From a Certain Point of View, The Empire Strikes Back. It's called A Good Kiss, and it features our sweet self-affirming man, Chase Wilsor. And it's... We're going to avoid spoilers here if we can. It is sort of based around A Good Kiss. I think if anyone knows Star Wars, knows Empire Strikes Back, they'll understand. It's you were each sort of given an assignment or a character or a scene from this film, and this is the one that you were given or chosen. We'll talk.
I chose it.
Okay. Well, no, that's right. I know it's because I've talked to Tom.
Was like,
I've talked to Tom from Del Rey about this, about the process, and I know it's a combination of both sometimes.
Yeah.
So I was going to ask you, did you choose or did they? So this is a famous scene, you know, the hallway scene between Han and Leia. And before we sort of talk about your story, Did you ever see The Family Guy Star Wars?
No.
So
should I?
Do you know they riffed on the original trilogy? I don't know if you know that or not, but they made like their own versions of each one. And
as like an episode or like a
but like almost like a like an hour but like an hour
oh, long. Okay.
Yeah, like an extended episode for each wow. one. So check them out. They're really I'm not a huge Family Guy fan, but these are actually really funny because they really got the essence of Star Wars, I think, and they really were really great at picking out certain moments, you know, don't jump out at you right away. So this is one of those scenes where they make a really good joke. I won't spoil it for you, but they do a really good joke with who I guess is Chase Wilsor now. So anyways, they take that scene and they do a really funny thing with it. So if watch the Empire Strikes Back one of Family Guy someday, and you're going to have a really good laugh at that part. It's really funny. Let's talk about just sort of how you got introduced to this, you know, whether email, phone call, however it happened, how you first heard about it, and the process of you getting to tell this story.
Sure. So it kind of started, Tom emailed my agent and was like, hey, we're doing From a Certain Point of View. Would CB be interested in writing one of these short stories? And he did like a little pitch about like what it was. And it was for the first book, Nonprofit, which donates books to children in need and also provides educational stuff. So it was like all like, you know, there wouldn't be any payment involved, but you would get to participate in this amazing thing that would benefit the community. And so the email pitch itself was like super professional and great and wonderful. And I remember getting the email and screaming and then
being unprofessional.
And then I emailed my agent back and like did this like long scream. And then in Tom's email, he was just like, if she's interested, like, you know, put together some pitches of some characters that she'd be interested in writing. So, but like more details to come, like there wasn't even a pitch process yet. It was just kind of like feeling out if I'd be interested. And so I just was like, and then I was like, you know who I want to write about? The box guy. This is 100% who I want to write about. Like, And I was just like, I don't know if I can call dibs, but I want to call dibs. And I like sent my agent the GIF, and Tal was amazing. And she, so I thought, you know, it was pretty funny because it was just like, I was being excited. And then later when we actually did the pitch where you had to like, you know, you come up with like the story and pitch it. I was like, all right, who's this guy? And I was like, all right, obviously, like it almost, when you're like thinking about a character and thinking about who they are, you have to, and you're, it's like there's like a chunk of marble and you're like sculpting it, and you sometimes you don't see who it is yet. You have to like work at it and figure out what it is and who they are and what their personality traits are. To me, Chase was like I knew who he was instantly. Like the way he walks through and he's just like, I got a job to do, guys. I got shit to do. I got places to be. No one's like, I where's my good kiss? And so that like sense of like personality is what kind of inspired me to write like his story. So that's where we went from there.
It's genius because like he's this unsatisfied, self-affirming, like grumbling guy. So it's not a spoiler to say he's a cook who wants to be more. He wants to he thinks he can contribute more to the rebellion than just being a cook or
what. Yeah, yeah, there was an excerpt teased. So yeah, right. I feel like we can talk about everything that was in the excerpt. He works in the kitchens, he runs supplies like calf and other, like, you know, he carries the boxes. And so he's failed basic training 3 times and
right.
He's getting denied for like, he wants to do cool things. He wants to be a hero. He wants to be important for like the rebellion. And so he's a disaster. He's my disaster.
He is kind of a, but he is kind of a disaster, but like all good disasters, like, and what's, I love these sort of like Gears of War stories, right? Where like the inner workings of this machine, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like it's not all Luke Skywalker's and Han Solo's, you mm-hmm. know, there's people that get this thing going and they're all mm-hmm. just as important as the next person, right? Like for every Luke mm-hmm. Skywalker, there has to be a Chase Wilson or the thing doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Thought he's a genius character in that sense, because it turns out that he does have, you know, even though he can't shoot a blaster to save his life, it turns out he has some other skills that do, you know, sort of help him, you know, at least, you know, feel, get some sense of satisfaction with himself. Cause he's so hard on himself too, more than anybody else. One of the things I really enjoyed about this short was it's really funny. And, you know, you've got some great lines, you know, he does a lot of muttering to himself, and he's just like, you know, he's like talking about Han and Leia, you know, they pretend to argue all over the base. the one bit about Fickleberry's baked on me pies is hilarious.
Thank you, that's my ode to pineapples on pizza.
Yeah, I laughed out loud at that part. And then the one part too where he's still sort of stacking and he's again muttering to himself, and you said it where he's like, you know, I could, you know, you could good kiss, I could use a good kiss. Like he's just so he's such a great character, and he's just one of those guys you instantly root for. I thought of the phrase sort of, he's a lovable loser. And, it seems like to me, I haven't read any of your previous stuff, unfortunately. I think I'm going to now, cause I'm a fan of yours now because of the stuff I have read of yours. Lovable losers seems to be kind of a thing you enjoy. We'll talk about Minecraft too. And that's, you know, is that something you're attracted to, or what's going on there?
Yeah, I feel like the characters that resonate with me are just kind of like, oh my god, I think I definitely have a type of the character that I am drawn to writing, with someone who's just like an awkward, like I don't know how to people, I don't know how to talk to, or like I can't, like, and it's interesting because I relate so hard to Chase and all my, like, you know, characters who think that they are the worst, because they're just like, I'm not a hero, I'm not, like, I don't have any amazing epic skills or superpowers. Jess, the main character in the first book of the Sidekick Squad series, like, her parents are superheroes and she doesn't have powers, so like she has like an arc of like, well, I'm a shitty student, I don't have anything going for me, I don't have powers, and I can't even talk to my crush, I'm just gonna be like failing through life. But I think with like Jess and Chase and like characters that I like really enjoy writing, this kind of arc where it's about like discovering power in the ordinary, like in power, like that you are extraordinary the way you are, and
right.
you don't need to be Luke Skywalker to, because not everyone has what makes them like you're, I don't know. I feel like it's an inherent part of being human that you're valuable because you exist. You have, you have amazing things about you that are specific to you.
Totally agree. And everyone has a voice and should be, you know, affronted a position to voice themselves. And, you know, one of the great things I liked about, this is really like you're almost, in a way, you're almost describing Minecraft, the characters of Minecraft too, by the way. One of the great things, I want to talk about those characters, but before, I just want to put a quick pin in the Star Wars conversation. It sounds like, you know, sort of dream come true situation here for you a little bit. So just curious what your history is with Star Wars, and there's, cause there's a couple of like deep cuts in this. Like there's a, I don't know if I should mention this part. I'm not going to mention it, but you mentioned a person, a name, and a member of the rebellion. I'll say it's a she, I'll say that much. Just a quick little mention of somebody, right? It's kind of a deep cut in Star Wars. Like the average Star Wars fan isn't going to know this person, but you drop it in there really nice and casually. And so it made me think about sort of what your history was with Star Wars.
Yeah, I don't know. I loved the movies as like as a kid, and like as the prequels came out when I was a very, very specific time, because there was so, I don't know, there was a lot of, I feel like there's always been Star Wars in my life.
Yep.
And it's just that like kind of larger than life, fantastical. I think just to me, it's about like that like sense of adventure and Luke's story in the first trilogy really brings together this like, you know, I'm discovering this, there's so much to me that I didn't know, and he gets to go on this journey and becomes a Jedi. And like with the new trilogy, I just loved seeing, you know, we get to meet Rey and Finn and Poe, and like there's different struggles, but they have a similar, like, you know, fighting back against the Empire and or the vestiges of the Empire, the First Order in the new trilogy. But there's, I don't know, I think a lot of it's just so much on hope. I rewatched Rogue One recently, and I was like, you know what, Rogue One still is very much, like, I think with all my Star Wars content, I feel like it's very much my favorite, because it leaves me with such a sense of, like, this is what Star Wars is about. It's about, like, it weaves together these amazing characters who are fighting back against something much bigger. I think it just brings a lot of hope to the world, and so, like, I'm glad that you caught that. I want to talk with you more offline if what you caught is what I think you caught. It was really, I think as a writer,
it's such a deep, deep world. And when you entered it, mm-hmm. and now, I mean, now, you know, you're entering it 42 years in,
mm-hmm.
and with all this history and backstory, and it's like, it's like, talk about, you know, the world's greatest sandbox to play in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for somebody like you who's uber creative and talented, and, you know, it's much be such a thrill. And talk about hope. You know, it's funny because, you know, I've got Amy Ratcliffe coming on
amazing.
I'm doing a round table with her and Jason, uh-huh. with Jason and Mike Chen. Uh-huh. Her story had it, you know, she quotes Jin Erso in her story, mm-hmm. right? You know, so hope is all about mm-hmm. hope, and such mm-hmm. that's such a big part of it. And I mm-hmm. think, you know, if I had the other part of Star Wars I love so much, is this goes to your point, which I really fucking loved that you made about, you know, everyone has something that's unique about them, and it, yeah, it's not maybe a superpower or whatever, but, you know, the big thing to me a lot of the times is just is courage. I love that word. I love using it in a fictional sense, and, you know, the will to act makes heroes, right? I mean, that's because mm-hmm. you're right. Not everyone has, you know, these specific skills. And this, I think, really, really jumped out at me, especially with Minecraft. Anyways, we'll wrap up. Just really, I really liked your short a lot. It's the type of short that I'm looking for in these things. It's the ones that I was drawn to in the first book, like the Star Wars from a certain point of view.
Mm-hmm.
It's the ones because, you know, I mean, I don't, you know, I love Yoda, but I don't know if I can read another Yoda story. You know what I mean? Like, I'm much more interested in these people that make the machine run. And and you just did such a great job.
Thank you.
With Chase, and you know, he becomes the hero of his story. Will he be written about in the great, you know, the in-universe propaganda machine, right, with Star Wars? And will General Reekin even remember his name next time? I don't know, right? When he keeps pestering him, which I thought was great. But, you know, Chase gets, you know, he does well in the end. And I was like proud of him at the end. You know what I mean? Especially when he at the very end, I was very proud. I was very proud of Chase. And to get, again, courage, finally had the courage. And then he steals the line from
spoilers.
Yeah, a little bit, but
it's in the title.
It's in the title. Yeah. That's the only reason why I bring it up. But he puts it to good use anyway. Let's put it that way. So anyways, great job. I really, really enjoyed it. I love Chase, and that's the kind of stuff I'm looking for. So I was like, yes, thank you. And because again, sometimes it's like Empire's a tricky one too, right? Because structurally it's kind of simplistic, and you know, you spend a lot of time just in the Millennium Falcon. And I remember talking to Tom about it, and it's just like, it's a real, you know, they're looking for really inspired ideas from the authors at the time when he was talking about the selection process. And it was so great to hear that you sort of right away had a really, sounds like you had a really clear picture of what you want to do with this, the box carrying dude in the hole.
Yeah, it was interesting because and just like reading the anthology as a whole is amazing. And then like Tom and everyone, the Star Wars Del Rey's team did such an amazing job, because I only saw like my part. And in many ways, I feel like it's kind of like, you know, when we're in Rebellion, you only see like, I'm the only person, I carry the box, and I can't see what everyone else is doing, and everyone has their part. And like seeing it all to come together and the way it's been, like it's not all completely in chronological order, because it skips a little bit.
Right.
And so there's like things that are happening on Hoth that are happening, you know, like, and this, you know, the evacuation and all this other stuff. And but like all these stories are interwoven together. It just works so well. I think Tom did such a fantastic job. It's just, yeah, it was so much fun to work on it. I hope everyone enjoys it and on all the stories.
Well, I know one thing for sure, especially with on the Del Rey side of Star Wars publishing, they really they like to go with a known commodity. So, start coming up with ideas for Return of the Jedi in a few years. I think you'll be all right. So, there's something in the air. There's some serious cross appeal going on, because you know, with Minecraft, there's even a few from a certain point of view authors who've now, you're on that list too. Mer Lafferty, Jason Fry, Catherine Valente have all done Minecraft novels, and so have you. So Minecraft, the shipwreck. So here's the summary they sort of pass out is really, really long, but there's like a quick one that I'm going to use.
Okay.
When three kids discover a mystery in an abandoned Minecraft server, they must race against the clock to uncover its secrets. Now, yeah, there's a longer summary, but it's actually too long. And I don't want to just sit here and read it all out.
That's all good.
But this short one doesn't do the book any justice at all, because I wouldn't want anyone to sleep on this book because they think it's only about Minecraft, because there's some fantastic character work in this book. You know, you really look at the human condition, I think, in a really important way. And yeah, there's some familiar tropes, but I thought it was really, really profound. So if that's like the kind of the easy peasy promotional language, what's the shipwreck about to you? Like, what's the heart of the book?
I feel like it's the heart of the book is about friendship.
Yep.
And also about figuring out who you are and being proud of it. And there's a lot to think about, like the sense of home and then being, I think for the main characters, when I first started thinking about a story, you know, Minecraft as it is a sandbox game, which has so many endless possibilities. And so it's this perfect, like, place to plan a story. And so, like, as a game itself, you know, playing with my friends on our own server, and we would come up with, like, ridiculous things that we'd have fun and do. But, you know, it all comes back down to, like, personality and, like, what we found hilarious or what was fun or what people were inspired to do, and just like the endless creativity. And I think about like just kind of like the social aspect of it and how that's so specific to Minecraft. And like, I don't know, video games are a powerful way to like connect with people. And I think for these three kids, Jake, Emily, and Tank, they all have their own specific ways where they feel disconnected from the world, and they don't really like for Jake, he's kind of adrift because his dad and him move around a lot, and so he's never really settled anywhere and made really close friends. And so he's always like, oh yeah, I'm gonna be really friendly and then try to be friends, but I'm not gonna trust that good feeling about like, because it could all go away any moment. And then with Tank, people really judge him on his size, and he's kind of this like big intimidating character, and you know, that's not like who he is on the inside. And so he's kind of swept up in this world that he doesn't necessarily want to be in, but he finds like peace in Minecraft. And for Emily, she's also like people are projecting this like she wants to be popular, she wants these girls or these her friends to like be impressed with her, and she does like, you know, she likes like clothes and makeup, but she also likes like, you know, she also likes redstone and building things in Minecraft and fighting and exploring caves. And so she has this whole other side to her that she doesn't think she can share with her friends. And so she's kind of struggling with like, well, which me is the real me and which me do people want me to be? And that's, I feel like the crux of the story is like, you know, these three kids who are so very different, like find themselves working together and learning like about themselves. And also like I can like make new friends, and I can like solve a mystery together. And I'm like, I don't know. I feel like that kind of adventure can be really powerful, and especially at that age.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's this sort of digital, like a Lord of the Rings adventure, right? So instead of, you know, like instead of the Fellowship going off together, you've got Emily, Jake, and Tank, and you know, instead of heading to Mount, you know, Doom, they're sitting in front of a bunch of old dusty computers in the community center with a LAN, you know, sort of just going, embarking on this really a great adventure. It just so happens to be just a game, right? So full disclosure, I've actually never played Minecraft. I can't do sandbox games. I'm not creative enough. So it's sad. I admit that it's really sad, but like I need someone else to manufacture a story for me. I love that. I love campaign focused games. Like give me the campaign, I'll work my way through it. That's the type of video gaming I like to do. So for me, video games aren't sort of a shared experience. You know what I mean? So growing up, I didn't have a lot of friends. So I think I just found myself attracted to just games I could play. Solo campaigns was all I did, right? So it was really fun reading this book. And I mean, I know what Minecraft is. But so one of the things, you know, that struck me, like even before I knew that you played it, it seemed like you did. Because you know, the vernacular and axioms were all, you had those down for sure. So either you're just incredible at research and homework, or it's clear you were an experienced Minecraft player, right? Just from the language. And so I was curious, how's the reaction been from the Minecraft community, which is your community?
I mean, the book just came out.
So, but there hasn't been any, yeah.
Yeah, I'm excited that people are excited. I mean, so far the book, today is Friday. The book came out on Tuesday. So, yeah, I mean, there's like that first rule of being an author. Don't read the reviews. But I'm just excited that people are excited. I think people were interested in the concept and they were excited about the cover. And as, you know, the book is out in the world, I'm hopeful that like people will continue to enjoy it. So I don't know. Cause it just came out.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. But I mean, I just feel like so many people get books early nowadays and right on Goodreads and stuff. And so I wasn't sure if there was a bank of reviews already out there or reactions anyways. So are you nervous about that at all with the Minecraft community? Is it's important to you?
I hope people like it. And it's a fun book. And I think all the Minecraft books are very different and fun. Like, you know, when I first started working with the Random House and Sarah, my editor, and she was like, well, what kind of story do you want to write? And you know, there's just like, you know, sandbox. So you know, I wanted to do something that was very specific and different, and I really enjoyed the crash. and it introduced a lot of fun elements. That's Tracy Baptiste's book, where Minecraft is a virtual VR experience, and the characters go into it, and there's shenanigans afoot there. Mm-hmm. But I wanted something to do very specific, where you have like things that were happening in the Minecraft world, but also things happening in the real world that everything influenced everything else. So just like a fun, like where I wanted the kids to have a sense of like, okay, these are like kids that are just like me or could be like me, or kids that you could find in your neighborhood. Mm. I hope that like, I think the fun of like, one of the fun things about like playing with friends and also meeting friends, I hope that it really captures that spirit of, you know, when you get a glimpse of like Viv, who's Tank's younger sister, she plays regularly on a server. So she has all these friends, and they have, you know, their regular hangouts and disputes. And so you get a glimpse of that, which I felt like, I was like, oh, that'd be a fun thing to include and let people see. There's so many different ways to play Minecraft. And hopefully these players will enjoy.
Yeah. So this is an IP. Was there, and sometimes there's an audition process. Did you have one of those?
Nope. it was more of like, would you be interested in doing this? And I was like, yes, that would be fun. I would love to do it.
Well, that's got to feel good then, them coming to you. So yeah, like you said, this is, you know, there's a lot of themes in this book anyways, found family, broken family, you know, sort of family trauma, pressures of youth, all that stuff, you know, because, you know, I'm not super familiar with Minecraft, but, you know, familiar enough, and then, you know, play plenty of video games besides Minecraft, but, you know, can definitely relate to, you know, the human element of this story. And you've got lines that affected me sort of in a personal way, like, you know, Jake's got the line about, you know, he knows he's a loser, and if you don't want to hang out with me at school, you don't have to, and stuff like that. Those are the lines in this book that really stood out for me, and it felt really personal. You know, was this a personal book to write for you at all, or?
I think so. I think all the books I write have an element of, like, put a lot of me in them, mm-hmm. where I...
Because I identified with Jake. I moved around mm-hmm. a lot as a mm-hmm. kid. Mm-hmm. And never had friends because of that. Mm-hmm. Like I went to like, I don't even, like sixth grade schools. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like I do a mm-hmm. lot. Yeah. So I was like, I identify with Jake quite a bit.
Yeah, because he's such a like I feel like that like it's such an experience that really affects you, and it shapes your idea of what is possible. So like even when he starts hanging out with like Tank and Emily, he's like, oh yeah, they're only here for the community service, and so like he's nervous about the whole experience, yeah. And like the. Yeah, it is. It's very personal to me in the sense of like as a kid, I was the weird kid. I actually did play a lot of games by myself. I didn't start playing like Minecraft with friends till I was older.
Right.
But as a kid, I played a lot of like Zelda on my Game Boy by myself, and like I like just a lot of I have very elaborate storylines that I would act out with like my figurines and you know, but there is just the sense of like no one really. Got like you know, and I think this is a feeling that is that a lot of kids go through, where they mm-hmm. think that you know, you think that you're the only one who knows what it's like to be you, and that's true. You are the only one who knows what it's like to be you. But there's I don't know. There's this very profound sense of feeling alone in the universe sometimes, where you think that like, oh, will anyone understand what I'm going through, or like what I'm excited about, or like. I don't know, as a kid, you're also like, oh, I want it. Like, there's a scene that in one of Jake's chapters where he, like, builds this really awesome thing in Minecraft and wants to show his dad, and his dad's busy and it completely blows him off. And that was kind of, like, a, like, personal moment for me, because I was like, oh, okay, like, as a kid, when you're really excited about something and you want to share it with someone else and then they're, like, dismissive of your passions, then mm-hmm. it really hurts. And so, and, like, all the kids in the book have, like, their own specific ways where they feel, like, kind of left out, or you know, all dealing with their own issues, and so that's the personal element that I brought to the book.
Yeah, and you know, Tank too, you know, sort of dealing with it differently. Whereas you know, he has friends. Emily's similar too. They're both unlike Jake, where they have friends. Tank isn't sure if he likes his friends, and you know, Emily isn't sure if her friends like her. So it's kind of a funny, you know. Dynamic there in the sense that there's, you know, here's these two people, like this found sort of family with the three of them, and it doesn't dawn on any of them, like you said, there's always this like, well, there's this like a clock ticking away, you know, as soon as they're done cleaning, we're not going to hang out anymore. It doesn't dawn on them that they're actually perfect for each other. So as the book moves on, we become sort of more immersed in the, you know, the Bella Beta 7 world, less so in the real world. It's a really great thing that I thought you start to put in there, where this game starts to bring out the best and the worst of these three. But in the end, you know, they realize that they have this great relationship that goes beyond the game. Was that your overall goal with this story? That, you know, beyond the game, you know, these kids have now struck a chord with each other that's probably going to last forever.
Yeah, for sure. It was definitely like something I wanted to bring, that like, hey, you can build these bonds, and like, yeah, like even the bond that you don't think that you can make with, like, in the unlikeliest of places. I feel like you definitely hit the nail right on the head.
There's a great sort of like, I don't know if it's like I guess it's kind of a mystery. There's like a mystery to this book, right? You know, mm-hmm. sort of things we won't talk about. It's sort of spoiler. It is spoilery. So I don't really want to ruin that part, this part of the book. But there's a really great thing, you know, like one of the, there's adults in this story as well, obviously, you know, not just parents, but sort of the reason they're sort of doing this community service is they get into a bit of trouble. And, you know, as they sort of, the description, you know, says they come across this sort of secret Minecraft world and it's the game that actually, you know, uncovers real world truths for them. You know, so in one of these, you have a really great character named Ellen Rees in it, and she's really great. And I'm just wondering sort of what was the thought process behind Ellen?
I don't want to spoil anything.
I know, if you can't, I know. You could probably hear me struggling away to say it.
Yeah. Ellen's a fun character to write. Yeah,
She was my favorite character in the book, by the way.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm so glad to hear. It's really fun to like chat with people who've read the book too, because that's really like this is like kind of the first time I'm also getting reactions.
And Viv. Ellen and Viv. Love Viv.
Ellen is like, when you first meet her, she's just like this crotchety old woman who manages this apartment building, and she's kind of mean, or like kind of really cranky, but she has this like heart to her and she doesn't let people see as her, but as she like, you know, like the start of the book, the kids get in trouble and Ellen like is like, all right, now you got to do this community service. And so they start seeing her as this kind of like, you know, authority figure slash, you know, she's the cranky old woman that mm-hmm. like is in their building, that like, if she had a lawn, she'd be like, get off my lawn. I like getting to like, as the, you know, kids get to know her and they learn more about her and like why, like what happened to the community center and why it's abandoned. You know, that's a very human story. And I like that too, because there's a lot of like, I liked playing with the assumptions that you kind of make about people, and then you like learn their story and you're like, okay, well there's why all that happened.
Yeah, it really sort of falls into place in a real, real natural way, I thought. Like, and it's hard to talk about her any really beyond what you've mentioned already and what I've talked about, because I really don't want to spoil any of that stuff for anybody else. But I thought she had a really great arc in the book, and I really, really was really stoked with the way you presented Ellen a certain way. I can't say it. I can't talk about it. It'll ruin it. It's so hard. It's so hard to talk about her without spoiling anything. So I'm just not even going to try.
It's okay. They'll just have to read the book.
They will. Which I recommend highly. There is a villain in this book. He's a jerk named Shark, but with big shiny braces, which I thought was hilarious. It's funny how you describe Shark. He sounds like the most like least attractive person ever, but they're like so full of themselves at the same time. He's like a great, he's a kid. He's not a villain, I guess. He's just the antagonist. But it's, you know, I love, there's a really, the Tank is really great too. Like that, you know, Tank's such a sweet, sweet boy. And it really broke my heart when they do get his sister Viv to sort of help them out a little bit. And he just immediately jumps to, well, I guess I'm out.
Yeah, because Viv's really cool and she knows all these things.
She's amazing, but like it's funny how his default is, I guess I'm just out now.
Yeah, he's actually, I think, probably, I mean, I wrote the book, so they're all my favorite characters, but Tank's story to me is probably like the most personal. I grew up in East LA where I set the book, and his family, you know, I grew up with like aunts and uncles living in our house. Like the house was always full of people and, you know, my parents worked late hours and, you know, there's a lot of everyone's like trying their best to like make it. And, an earlier drafts of the book, actually, it was like more intense, but, I like scaled it back a bit, but Tank's like has worries as a kid that he shouldn't have to have worries about, but he does. And, you know, it sucks, but that's a reality for a lot of people. And I did want him to have a chance to be a kid. And, you know, he gets kind of typecast in this, like, you know, when we first meet him at the start of the book, he's recently had a growth spurt. So he's this like, you know, big linebacker sized guy that, you know, has broad shoulders and people assume that he's older, but he's like, he's 14 and he's a kid. He just wants to like build things that are pretty and put flowers in them and collect the, and he's also afraid of so many things. He's afraid of like rejection. He's afraid of not, you know, he's friends with Shark because like Shark and those guys are kind of the first people that are like, oh, okay, you're one of us and you're, in order to get by, like people are going to see you as tough. So we're going to help manufacture this tough image. And he buys into that because he's like, okay, that's how we survive. It was really great to just write his story and see and kind of unpack all of that.
Yeah. Like I'm old, but I can remember high school and there's this like safety in numbers thing, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, maybe Ian Tank's just like, you know, from the beginning, Tank isn't super stoked to be, you know, hanging. He knows Shark and those guys are kind of just like burgeoning criminals, I guess. I don't know. but it's beats being alone. He says it a few times, you know what I mean? I think about school and you know, it beats being by yourself. And I really love, you know, this, bringing these three together, it really I thought was great. And there isn't a character I really don't like in this book. It's kind of odd for me to say, because there's always trying, my default is to find something I don't like about somebody. But I just really couldn't, with the main characters in this book, find something I didn't like about them. I guess that's a compliment too.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Minecraft the Shipwreck is out now. And so please, please, please support your local independent bookstores or go to bookshop.org online to get it. I highly recommend getting this book. If you like Minecraft, you're going to like it, I have a feeling. If you just like great, honest, heartfelt storytelling, I think you're also going to like it. And if you like both those things, then you're really going to love this book. So I flew through it. I think I read it in one sitting. And I can't recommend it enough. CB, really, honestly, I think it's really great. And
thank you.
And then, from a certain point of view, The Empire Strikes Back, as of this recording, comes out next week. Same deal. Please support your local bookstores if you can. If you can't, look for it online. Claudia Kishi Club documentary is still on Netflix. I definitely recommend that. CB-Lee.com for all the latest and what you're up to. Is there anything else you got going on that you're allowed to talk about right now? Or
That's all the new stuff. I've got I'm working on the last book in my Sidekick Squad series, which it's about a group of teens in a post-apocalyptic world and their superpowers and fighting back against corrupt government. The release date for the last one hasn't been announced yet, but that will be forthcoming.
Is that, and when's that coming out?
It hasn't been announced yet.
Are you in the middle of writing that right now, or are you into revisions?
Yeah, I'm still working on it.
Yeah.
It's just been an interesting time because I started writing that series in like 2015.
Okay.
And so writing about these kids who are like forming a resistance movement against like a corrupt government, and you know, it's a different world than our own because there are superpowers, right. And there's other dangers and, you know, flying robots and stuff. Writing it the last few years has been a specific experience for me, and just, you know, it's it's been just tying it all up and getting all of those pieces in place and finishing out in a way that I want the story to have the ending it deserves.
Okay. So, that's what I was going to ask you. It's book four. Is that exactly?
Yeah. It's the last
gonna be
one.
That's going to be the last one. Okay. Mm-hmm. And any ideas for what's next?
I do have stuff in the works that I can't announce
way
yet.
Way too early. But, yep. No, that's fair.
Oh, wait, no, I know. There's something that has been announced, so I can talk about that.
Okay.
I have a novel, which is part of a series with Macmillan. It's classics that have been remixed. So a number of different authors are mixing different classics. I will be doing a remix of Treasure Island. So that will be next year.
Oh, that's very cool. What is that called? I think I've heard of that.
It's like the remix classic series.
Okay.
And it's not really it's a series, but all the books are different classics. So my story is a queer Southeast Asian take on Treasure Island. So I'm taking the story, setting it in, in the 1800s of the golden age of piracy. So nice. Excited about that.
Right on. Yeah, I think I've got that in my inbox somewhere. I have to look for that. That sounds familiar. Well, that's awesome. That sounds super great. So book four in the Sidekick series comes out, I don't know, sometime in the future, maybe next year, hopefully. Once again, From a Certain Point of View comes out next week, and Minecraft the Shipwreck is out now. CB, I can't thank you enough for taking the time. I'm going to get into your other stuff for sure, because I'm a huge fan of your writing.
Thank you so much.
I think it's great. I think it's emotive. I think you're a really funny writer. Like, I think I find, I'm smiling a lot when I'm reading your stuff, so I hope that continues on. And
that's good to hear. Funny because I don't think I'm funny. But
really?
It's easy to be funny in like a book because you have like time to think about like a joke or like a really great moment.
Yeah.
And sometimes things do work out where like they come to you or like, oh, this would be great. Or like, no, I need a. Or sometimes it's like, oh, that would be this really great joke. There's actually a joke in the Sidekick Squad series, which I didn't get to use in book two. So I used it in book three.
Okay.
When it was cut, I was so sad. And then I like wrote like three extra chapters to make sure.
That's awesome. Well, I'm going to be looking for that then when I'm going to get into that series. So I'm going to be looking for that. I think you've got a great sense of humor. Not like you are a great joke teller, but I just like it's plot derivative, I guess, but it's just, I think you have, it seems to me like you have a great sense of humor. So if you don't think so, then I guess I'm here to tell you you're wrong.
I appreciate that.
Thanks. Yeah, no worries. So have a great weekend. There you have it. Another episode of Everything is Canon all wrapped up. Huge thanks to CB for joining me. It was a huge thrill getting to discuss not only Minecraft the Shipwreck with her, but Star Wars and the Babysitter's Club as well. Minecraft the Shipwreck and From a Certain Point of View, The Empire Strikes Back are both out now. I highly recommend picking up both of these books. You won't regret it. So make sure to check out your local indie booksellers and get on that today. Head on over to cb-lee.com to see what she's got going on. And as always, be sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you choose to listen. And head on over to cinelinks.com for the latest movie, TV, books, and gaming news. Please be safe out there. Bye for now.